Hello, and welcome to Discussions with DPIC. I'm Robert Dunham, Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center. In this episode, we'll be speaking with former Illinois Governor George Ryan. Governor Ryan served in the Illinois House of Representatives from 1973 to 1983, then as Lieutenant Governor and Secretary of State from 1983 through 1999, and then as Governor from 1999 to 2003. In 1999, the exoneration and release of Illinois death row prisoner Anthony Porter opened Governor Ryan's eyes to problems with capital punishment as administered in Illinois and sparked a chain of events that ultimately led the state to abolish the death penalty. In the wake of the Porter exoneration, Governor Ryan established a special governor's commission to study the state's death penalty system and declared a moratorium on executions. 2 days before his term in office ended, saying the system remained, quote, fraught with error, Governor Ryan commuted the sentences of all 167 death row prisoners to life terms. While not the first blanket commutation in U.S. history, it is by far the largest, accounting for roughly two-thirds of all death penalty commutations in the country since 1976. Recently, Governor Ryan released a new book written with award-winning journalist Maurice Posley entitled Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois. The book traces Governor Ryan's journey from legislative supporter of the death penalty to death penalty abolitionist. Governor Ryan, thank you for joining us on Discussions with DPIC.
Well, thanks, Robert, for having me. And congratulations on the work that you do with your association there.
Thank you. Recently, Governor, you released a new book, and it traces your journey from death penalty supporter to death penalty opponent. Let's start at the very beginning. You were first elected to the Illinois legislature in 1972, the year the U.S. Supreme Court struck down all existing death penalty statutes. In 1977, you voted to restore the death penalty in Illinois. Why was that?
Well, that's exactly where it started. It was the Supreme Court, as you know, canceled the death penalty for everybody in the United States in 1972, and then let the states reintroduce the death penalty all across America. In 1977. I was a member of the House for 5 years at that time. I remember the debate vigorously. They stood on the House floor and voted green to reinstate the death penalty because I'd always been a believer in the death penalty and thought it was necessary. But it wasn't anything that ever came up outside of an election. Sometimes you'd get a questionnaire to ask whether you were for the death penalty or against it. You'd check the little box and say you were, and that'd be the end of it. Everybody wanted to be tough on crime in those days because that was a trend. But we took the death penalty up in 1977, and I was voting green when a fellow on the Democrat side, I think his name was Bob Moore, stood up and said, for those of you that are voting green there today, how many of you would throw the switch to execute somebody? Now, that gave me a little pause for thought. I said, I think the law is needed, and I think it's necessary. But I would never want to throw the switch. Little did I know that some 20 years later that I'd be charged with that obligation when the time came. And I didn't know it then, but I know it. I knew it when it came, I can tell you.
When you voted on the death penalty, did you feel as though you had a firm understanding of what was involved in it, in administering it as a public policy?
No, I didn't really, because it was one of those issues, as I said, you know, when you run for public office, everybody wants to be tough on crime. We had an election here with the governor that I took the place of in 1999, Jim Edgar. And he ran against a former state senator for the governorship that he won. And she was always trying to get Edgar to be against the death penalty. But he knew that he couldn't do that because he didn't want to look like he was soft on crime. But he made her look like she was awfully soft on crime, and he beat her, and that's why he beat her.
You describe the exoneration and release of Anthony Porter as a transformative moment in your view about the death penalty. Would you tell our audience what happened in that case and why it was so significant to you?
I got elected in 99, and it was just a few months into my term when I was sitting in the mansion in Springfield, Illinois, watching the news out of Chicago, and my wife and I were there. News says that here's a little guy named Anthony Porter who'd just been released after 16 years on death row, and that he had been exonerated by the courts because he was innocent, and they let him go. And he was all grin and smiles and happy to be out. I'm not sure he knew why he was there. He had a pretty low IQ, and he was just one happy camper that he was getting out of jail. But they said that he'd been there for 16 years. And I said to my wife, how does that happen in America? How do you put somebody in jail for 16 years of their life? And each morning when they wake up, they have to wonder about, is this the day I'm going to get executed or not? Well, that's what happened to Anthony Porter. And I said, I don't know how that can happen in this country, and it shouldn't happen. It's just not right that he'd sit on jail for 16 years. Then the state didn't want to pay him a whole lot for all the time he spent there as an innocent man. So that's what really triggered my total thought on it. And that's what I started to look into things. The Tribune, along with Morris Posley, when he was there at the time, did a series, and they started to point out some of the faults with the death penalty. Jailhouse snitches, the worst kind of information that you could have in a trial is a jailhouse snitch. Prosecutors that were a little overzealous and would misuse their power to do whatever they could to get a conviction. That was pretty prevalent. You had attorneys that were defending people that were on death row, sitting on death row. This guy is hired to defend this person to save his life. And they were either alcohol infested or drug infected. And it was just a terrible situation. And they had all white juries convicting black defendants. It was just so many errors in that system as I looked at it and looked at that story that the Tribune ran. I decided that maybe it needed a little more investigation. And that's when I appointed a commission to present us with some legislation that we could send to the General Assembly that would lessen the possibility of an innocent person being executed. We had 85 pieces of legislation, 85 bills, and it passed only one. It was an election year when I put it in, and I was a short-termer as governor. I only had a few months left. Term was that we just couldn't get anything done from the General Assembly. So they passed only one piece of legislation, and that was the videotaping of confessions. So I decided to look at all of the cases to see what could happen if we made sure that all 167 people had some kind of a guilt or the possibility that maybe they were innocent. At that time, we had exonerated 13 through the courts, had been sat on death penalty for several years, and we had executed 12. So it was kind of like flipping a coin, live or die with the death penalty. And that's where it started with commutations, and I studied every case there on the death penalty, all 167 of them. I traveled with the records, carried them with me everywhere I went, when I was riding in the car or on an airplane or in my office or going to bed. I studied all 167 cases. And I decided that I couldn't determine whether there was who was guilty and who was innocent. I read a lot of things that gave me pause for consideration, but I decided that I couldn't determine who would live and who would die in those cases. So I commuted the sentences of 167 people, committed them to life in prison. And that's where we started with the whole deal to get rid of the death penalty.
You raised a lot of issues in that answer. And so I'd like to take them piece by piece. Another one of the things, and I thought it was one of the most striking things in your book, was your observation about how little legislators actually knew about the death penalty when they voted to bring it back. Still, you were learning most of what you found out about the death penalty from the media after you became governor. I spent 4 years as a state legislative assistant before I went to law school, and I've spoken with numerous legislators and several other governors about this, and they all say the same thing. So what do you think that legislators ought to know, that they should have known about capital punishment when they were undertaking their votes on it? And what steps do you think should be undertaken to make sure that governors know more about the flaws in the administration of the death penalty and flaws in the judicial review process when they're making decisions on clemency or moratoriums or potential death penalty reform?
Well, it's like most issues that go through the General Assembly and that governors are involved with. It's a matter of education. Governor's got to be educated, and he has to know what it's all about. The death penalty was an issue that the public generally didn't care about. And if they didn't care about it, the legislators and the governors certainly didn't. As I think I said earlier, when I ran for office, you get forms from all of the groups and asking several questions about how you feel about things. And they've always got a little box. How do you feel about the death penalty? Are you for it or against it? I always marked the box I was for it because I did believe in it. And I thought it was a deterrent and it was necessary for the proper conviction and necessary to have to prevent crime. But I learned as I saw these cases with Anthony Porter, where he spent 16 years on death row, and people that had been exonerated, more had been exonerated than had been executed as a result of that. But again, nobody that's running for office wants to look like they're soft on crime, and that's what happens with the members of the General Assembly. Now, the only time that I had anybody in the public ever talk to me about it was when I got that form in the mail. I'd have debates. Nobody talked about the death penalty. And nobody asked me about it when I was out campaigning during the state. And so it was an issue that the general public, I think, kind of felt about it like I did. It was there. It was necessary. It was good. And it worked. And it works fine. Until, of course, I started to look at it more and got education. So education is really what's necessary. But I still think that the public is still kind of passive about it.
One of the key steps you took, and you mentioned this, was the creation of the special commission. And obviously, it had a critically important education component to it to try to flesh out all the problems it could in making recommendations to improve or correct Illinois' death penalty. How did you choose who is going to serve on that to make sure that you got the best set of views possible?
Well, I had some advice from people in the legal business, lawyers, prosecutors, public people, that business people. I talked to a lot of people. I think the commission was, I'm not sure how many members. I don't know, there was 14 or 18, I don't remember, but to help pick the right people. Now, they had a lot of pundits that thought maybe I was going to try and pack it to continue the death penalty, and I never did. I didn't ask anybody to vote anyway, but they met for over a year's time and came up with 85 recommendations to improve the death penalty laws, but the improvement being that you lessen the chance that an innocent person is going to be executed. So I just kind of went through and picked out some top-notch people that were prosecutors, defense lawyers, people that were involved with it, and then we had a good commission, and they did a lot of work and presented a good set of bills that the General Assembly declined and refused to act on.
That's another really interesting point that I wanted to bring up. Commissions have recommended reforms in many states. Illinois, yours was one of the first and one of the most influential. Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, just to name a few. But for the most part, legislatures in those states hadn't done much of anything and still haven't done much of anything in terms of implementing reforms. Why is it that even in the face of this bipartisan evidence of significant problems across the death penalty system, that legislatures aren't willing to meaningfully address issues dealing with the death penalty?
Because I believe that nobody really is that interested in it. Most people, the public, they're going about their daily chores and their work. And then somebody says, "Oh, Joe got the death penalty today." And they say, "Well, he probably deserved it." The FBI does their job and the people work hard, the prosecutors, and he must be guilty. And I don't want to look like I'm soft on crime because I'm running for office. I think that's part of it.
When you were in office, you served as Republican governor. Did others in your party support your skepticism about the death penalty at that time? And have you noticed a difference over time in how other conservatives now view the death penalty?
I only had one person on my staff at the time that thought I was doing the right thing. A fellow by the name of Matt Bettenhausen, who was my death penalty guy, if that's the right frame. He was the only one that thought it was okay and that I should do what I was doing. Everybody else on my staff, even my chief of staff, thought I shouldn't do it because it was politically, but I wasn't going to run again for office, and so I wasn't concerned about any of those things.
When votes on the death penalty are ideological, they are, as you described them, a question of whether somebody appears to be hard on crime, tough on crime, or is being soft on crime. But when you get into the actual issues with the death penalty? Is it a deterrent or not a deterrent? The evidence shows that it's not. Is it cost effective? Does it work? The evidence shows the most likely outcome of a capital case once a death sentence is imposed is that the conviction or death sentence is going to be overturned. The appeals process is going to take a long time, both for people who end up being executed and for people who end up being exonerated. With the risk of executing innocent people, it doesn't seem to be fulfilling the pro-life philosophy that most conservatives espouse. But in the 70s and 80s and 90s, you didn't hear those issues being discussed. Is that something that you are seeing more of now? And how are conservatives responding to those issues?
I think that there has been a change. I think there's a 28, you know better than I do, I think it's 28 states that are still got the death penalty. And the United States still has it. I think they just executed some people this last week. Over at Terre Haute, Indiana, or maybe it's coming up this week. You probably know the answer to that.
Yeah, that was the last batch was last week.
Last week, okay. The last batch. They got a batch. Anyway, my feeling always was that when I heard about the Anthony Porter, first of all, I'm sure you know he was exonerated by journalism students at Northwestern University.
That's right.
So there wasn't anything that the system could say, oh, the system really works, because the system didn't. And if it hadn't been for the journalism students at Northwestern, Anthony Porter would be in a box right now, and he would have been put away pretty quick. It was only a couple of days away from him being executed when they did that. And that was my concern, that an innocent person is going to be executed. And that's why I made the efforts that I did after I saw poor little Anthony Porter go through what he went through.
Now, I know this is a touchy subject, and I want to be respectful about it. After you finished your term as governor, you were convicted of federal corruption charges and spent more than 5 years in prison. There are many stories of other people who were former public officials whose opinion of capital punishment and particularly prosecutorial excesses changed after they were in prison. But your conversion on capital punishment predated the time in which you went to jail. Did your personal experience with the criminal legal system further affect your views about the death penalty or mass incarceration in general?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't on death row. I was a prisoner. It was a waste of time. But, I mean, there's other things they could have, if they wanted to punish me, they did that. They didn't do it, doesn't do any good. So the incarceration is kind of a joke for people like me when I could have done a lot more to help society. Had they left me out to raise money or given me some chores to do voluntarily, it would have been a lot better. That's true with the former governor, too, Rod Blagojevich. They put him away for almost 14 years, but he got Trump to commute his sentence. But no, I mean, I had this thing for me was the fact that it took the journalism students to exonerate and find a man innocent that was a death's doorstep. That's why I continued my efforts in it and didn't do anything until spent a lot of time putting this book together to make sure I had it right.
You mentioned a moment ago the federal government's resumption of executions this year after a 17-year hiatus. And so much of the rhetoric we've heard around those federal executions is based on myths and falsehoods. It appears to have a highly political component to it. What are your thoughts on how the federal executions and the federal government has been politicizing the death penalty?
I guess it's a matter of everybody, individual people, as we watch what's unraveling now with the Justice Department, these prosecutors that they've got out to how are all, I think the director of the FBI or the director of the Justice Department said that they have some overzealous prosecutors there, and they're kind of headhunters. They find a case and they want to make a name for themselves, and so they go about it. My prosecutor made the statement that he wanted to bag two governors, and he got it done. He got the Rod Blagojevich and myself. Was there some hanky panky going on there? I don't know, but I do know that George Bush was the president at that time, and he was very upset with me because I did what I did with the commutation. And he let me know about it in no uncertain terms. So I don't know whether it's all done. The laws that I was convicted of are no longer illegal, the things there. So there's got to be a change. And when you're talking about the death penalty, if you can't get it straight and get it right, then you better not have it. It's a pretty permanent thing. You can't go back and do it over. Can't have a rerun. I would rather err on the side of life than on the side of death.
You discussed with respect to your own prosecution, and as you learned with exonerations in Illinois, a lot of the exonerations were largely the product of police corruption or overzealous prosecutors. And in this particular historic moment where police violence and obstruction of reform by police unions and prosecutors' organizations has become so prominent, how do we go about getting reform? How do we make it so that the system can actually change?
I guess it's just you have to be watchful and see what's going on. We had a police captain here by the name of Burge. Burge was a police captain, and he was he always solved the crime and found the killer and found the criminal. And they found out that he was torturing people to confess, false confessions from him. Went on, and eventually he was found guilty of those things and went to prison. He since died. He was a guy that everybody thought was a wonderful guy because he was solving all these crimes. Everybody that he put in prison cost the state and cost the city of Chicago, especially, millions of dollars. It's got to be a watchful thing to see what's going on. And it's got to have somebody, I guess, that's concerned about it and looking at it.
On January 10th, 2003, you pardoned four death row prisoners. Then the next day, you commuted the death sentences of the 167 death row prisoners who had completed appellate review. And I know you talked about how you lived with each of these cases and reviewed each of the cases. How did you decide to pardon those particular four individuals?
Well, they were exonerated, by the courts to begin with, as I recall. I'm not sure what the four cases are right now. I forget. At the time, I thought that they were absolutely innocent. I can't remember even their names right now and a lot of the detail, but it was just proven to me that they didn't commit the crimes in evidence and DNA testing in some cases, I think. And I thought it was the only thing to do to let them get their reputations back.
You write in your book, "I came to see the abolition of the death penalty as perhaps the greatest opportunity before me to leave the world a better place than it is now." It's been almost two decades since you declared the moratorium and Illinois went on to abolish the death penalty. What makes the release of your book so important now in helping to make the world a better place?
Well, I think it is important because there are still 28 states, as you know, that have the death penalty, and of course, the United States, the only country that in the free democracies of the world that do that. And so I thought maybe my book might be appropriate for that. And the fact that still some people that are concerned about it, and we still have 28 states that have it.
I know we've covered a lot of ground in our conversation, but before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
No. My book is available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and Kindle, or any place you can make contact those people, you can buy a book.
The book gives a pretty dramatic reading of what happened in Illinois. The book is "Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois," co-authored with Pulitzer Prize winning Chicago reporter Maurice Posley. As the governor said, it is now out and available. Governor Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on Discussions with DPIC.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it very much.
To learn more about the death penalty, visit the Death Penalty Information Center website at deathpenaltyinfo.org. And to make sure you never miss an episode of our podcast, subscribe to Discussions with DPIC on your podcast app of choice.